Christian Parenting.
This is Be Love, Do Good Podcast, and I'm your host, Christy Hayes, mama to two, founder of Be Strong Story, and author of the children's book, The Lunchbox Note, a true story of how a lunchbox note that said, be strong, protect the weak, love everyone, changed our life, and created a mission for our family. Join us each week for conversations that inspire our families to live out true compassion, kindness, and what it looks like to be love and do good in our communities. It may take us out of our comfort zones, you guys, but I promise it will put us on a path to see others, love others, and quite possibly change the world. Hey everyone, welcome to Be Love, Do Good Podcast. I'm your host, Christy Hayes, and today we have on Josh and Katie Walters. They have written a book about marriage and just one of the toughest seasons that they went through in their marriage and really giving us some encouragement and hope. I know for those of us who have been married a while, there are heartaches and there are really tough times in marriage. A lot of times we don't like to recognize those or to tell people about those, but I hope this interview encourages you. They wrote this wonderful book about their vulnerabilities, about a season of betrayal called New Marriage, Same Couple. We talk a lot about that today, and I know that you will enjoy this and get some encouragement in your marriage. Thank you for helping me welcome Josh and Katie Walters. Hey, Katie and Josh, thanks so much for being with me on the Be Love, Do Good podcast. So I want to just kind of dig in. You wrote a book called New Marriage, Same Couple, and you talk a little bit about your story. But before we talk about kind of that hard season, I want to just talk about the beginning. Like when you guys first got married, let's just start from the beginning. What was it like when you got married? How did you meet? What were those first years like? Were they stressful? Were they hard? Were they wonderful? Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, we met our freshman year of college. Katie was from Charlotte and I was from Columbia. We went to the University of South Carolina, and it was really one of those deals where we had both really started walking with God, I would say, our freshman year of college, and Katie was pretty hardcore. Like, she would go out to dates with guys and ask about their faith or God.
Nice.
If it was kind of quiet, like, she would straight up end the date, leave the spaghetti on the table and go home, you know. So I started hearing about this girl, but guys were like, I was started at College Charleston. I moved home and I started hearing about Katie, and they were like, man, you got to meet her, but don't date her. She'll break your heart. And it was like, that's the kind of girl I'm looking for. And so it took me a while for her to convince her that she felt the same way about me, but she came around, and I would say early on we were like, man, just really sold out for God. And it seems like one of those seasons where we were living on mission. We'd stay up all night sharing our faith with waitresses at IHOP, and, you know, just like, it was just a fun season of mission and of love with each other. And we got married our senior year, had dated for about a year and a half, were engaged for about a year and a half, and got married Christmas of our senior year, found out we were pregnant with our first when we graduated. And so, I think we were the, among our friends anyway, the like lovey-dovey, hardcore, going after God and convinced that we wanted to be school teachers, so we'd spend part of the year here teaching and then part of the year somewhere in the world overseas. We were going to have two llamas, Larry and Leona. We don't
know why. Yes, I would love that. I think you can still do that. Bring that dream back.
We totally could.
It could happen.
Yeah, so very early on, our second date, I went home and told my roommate after I met her, it's like, bro, I'm going to marry that girl. And I was not looking for a girlfriend, much like a wife, you know, but there was just something really special about her. And so our second date, I knew I wanted seven kids, kind of grew up with a best friend that was one of seven, and their house was always a party. And I have one sister, but always wanted the brothers and the whole, you know, rolling deep in the neighborhood vibe. And so we went out on the date. I was like, hey, the big question on the count of three, I need to know how many kids you want. One, two, three. And we both said seven.
No way.
Yeah. So, yeah, so a lot's changed. We've moved a ton, bounced around a lot, but I would say that vision of seven kids has been the one unchanging
dream.
Yeah. You know, dream we accomplish. So,
yeah, that's so true. I would say that totally covers it. And, you know, also once you move from that season of love and friendship and fun, it was, I feel like it was like a greenhouse of growth during that season. Yeah. And then we moved into adulting pretty quickly, you know, 4 months after we got married, we got pregnant. And, so it was jarring. I feel like Josh took it way more in stride than I did. I don't know if anybody's ever felt like that about themselves. Like, wow, I really didn't see that adulting was going to be such a challenge for me. But it seemed like those first 5 years of marriage, we were just continuing to take the world by storm, yeah. You know?
And I would say we didn't pace ourselves very well. We're both like very active people and, you know, aren't much for like movies or prolonged chill time, you know, so we stay on the go a lot. And so mm-hmm. a lot of that season, we were both getting our master's, started full-time jobs, started having kids, we're renovating properties. So we had, in a lot of ways, over the first 7 years, without seeing it or really knowing it, and I had some mentors tell me, like, hey, you ought to probably get rid of the rental property for now, because we were playing landlord and fixer-upper person and all that too. But it was just like part of us thrived on the pace and busyness, but I would say low-key there were some consequences and some distance that it was creating that I had written off as just adulting, or this is what it's like to be a young professional and a new dad and a student still, and it won't always be this way, but we're going to grind and, you know, work hard right now. So mm-hmm. looking back, I see how, you know, a lot of it was just kind of ignorance and youth that I missed. Like, man, there are actually big consequences to small daily decisions.
Yeah. What would you say, so for those of new couples who are starting to get married and have kiddos and they're kind of still in that bliss of like their first kid and it's not, we don't resent each other yet and you're not mad because the husband's at work and you're home with the children all day and then he comes home and it's like, what's for dinner? And you're like, are you freaking kidding me? So talk to me about that. Like for new people, what are some of those, not red flags, but maybe the things that you look back and go, man, we should have paid attention to this.
I like how you say that like it's a given part of the process. Like you don't resent each other yet.
Right, yeah. Right. But you will. You will.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, just that. I think about you saying it like that. And I look at those first 5 or 6 years and we had red flags of like, mm-hmm. you know, Josh definitely was starting to see resentment in me. And a lot of that was honestly not on him. I wanted to shift all the blame to him. You know, we wanted a big family. But when we were in college, it was like we were both going to be on mission, on this adventure. And then what happens is, like, you know, both of you start doing very, like, unseen, exciting tasks, you know, and to build a life together. And I think in building that life together, there were probably a lot of ways that we could have protected that love, that fun, that adventure that we had, you know. And mm-hmm. early on, we honestly didn't know. We always say our life versus John 10:10 is the enemy comes to steal, kill, and destroy, but I've come that they would have life and have it more abundantly. And we would always be like, abundant life, that's what we're going for, abundant life. And I think we really did not realize that there is an enemy constantly prowling to assault your marriage. And, you know, when you talked about that of the 40s, there's marriages all around us. We really think there is a true assault happening on marriages right now and, you know, has been throughout history, but especially right now. And I think whatever season you find yourself in, where you're stretched thin, or you're just thinking like, maybe this is just normal that we fight with each other, we blame each other, we are getting to the end of the day, you know, worn out, not alive, not excited, not dreaming together. You know, the truth is all those things are major red flags, because that love, that marriage, that first, you know, fire of your romance is yours to protect. It is yours to guard and to fan into flame. And so we both think that looking back on it, there were some ways that we could have more practically protected ourselves against just the pace and hurry of life.
Yeah. And I think for me, I remember one lunch meeting I had with a guy I referenced a minute ago that a mentor told me I should probably get rid of the rental property. And two things stand out for me. One, he was the only person in my life that saw the like pace and scope of my life that could speak into it. You know, we were running at such a pace that I had coworkers and neighbors and workers and tenants and all these people that saw a facet of me. And so I would just say, one, like, man, make sure there's some people, not just a person, that can see kind of the scope of your life and decisions and pace you're running at and speak into you about it. But then two, like, I remember thinking that I knew best. And it's just like so foolish now when you get to the point, as you know, especially when you're young and newly married, like, man, your decisions have big consequences and they're going to set a trajectory for kind of the foundation of your marriage that you lay, and ultimately like a lot of the pace that you run at and what you do with your life. But man, that newly married season, the newly parenting season, the toddlers, the first job, second job, like you only have all those things once. And so just don't be in such a rush to hustle to the next season, man. Enjoy it and make sure you surround yourself with some people that love you, but aren't all that impressed with you.
Right. Has this podcast impacted your life? You're not alone. This podcast is part of the Christian Parenting Podcast Network of 37 total shows that reach hundreds of thousands of other parents just like you. We are so honored to be a part of their network. They provide digital and printed resources, encouragement that is rooted in biblical truth, and they have an entire network of faith-based podcasts just for families, including this one. But as you know, creating resources and running podcasts, it's not free. And so as a donor-based ministry, Christian Parenting relies on generous donors just like you to continue to make podcasts like mine happen. So if you love this podcast, and I hope you do, would you consider giving a year-end gift to Christian Parenting? We are seeking to raise $23,661 by December 31st so that we can continue to produce the podcast and reach even more parents in 2024. Every gift matters and every gift makes a difference. You can give your best gift by December 31st to help end the year strong and reach our goal. Give today at cpgive.org. That's cpgive.org. I think what we learned is communication is so key. So I'm an extrovert and know who I am and know my feelings very well. Can say them. I mean, you could ask me right now how I'm feeling and I could very much verbalize that. My husband, on the other hand, is an introvert. He's a processor. So he's like, I need to ride the train for like 3 days, get back to you. And by the time he gets back to me, I'm like, I don't even know what you're talking about because I was done with that literally 3 days ago. And what I'm learning now, literally 20 years as we're sitting in a counseling office, you know, every other week, is that we never communicated. We never knew how to communicate. He never knew how to tell me, hey, when you do this, I'm starting to feel some resentment towards you. Instead, all that resentment built for years. And now 20 years later, I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, what? Like, why would you resent me for that? I don't even know what I did. And so then I'm mad because I'm like, you didn't even tell me. So that doesn't even count. That was 20, you know, that was so many years ago. And, so it's just like, if we would have just learned how to communicate and learn, like we were so, you know, I tell my kids now, I'm like, the thing that I will get you for your marriage, like your first year of marriage, is we will buy you counseling for a year and HelloFresh. So your wife doesn't have to make, you know, so either of you don't have to make dinner. You can do it together. Those are the two things, because we think we get in here and we know everything. And we are so in love and we miss that part. And so that resentment builds up. So talk to me a little bit about, you know, in your book, you talk about this resentment building up and then it comes to a head and this really hard season happens. Can you walk me through that?
Yeah. So in our story, and you know, one thing I just want to say about your story too, what I love, Christy, is that we always say you're trying to build this house together on both people's strengths. And I love that even though your husband isn't that much of a processor, in a season like where the lunchbox story came from, where you could have been just overwhelmed with resentment and caring so much, you listened to this really prophetic voice that he had into your entire family, you know, and then built on that. And it's such a good example of what happens in marriages, because we don't recognize each other's strengths. And then those weaknesses just start to drive wedges, I think, between us. And in our story, you know, looking back on it, we were isolated. We had, we always tell our kids too, the same thing like you do about HelloFresh and whatever. We say, we want you to move away and build a family identity, a strong family identity, like forge your family together. Because we didn't, we kind of stayed same city. And looking back on it, You know, I would have said that my girlfriends were like the, you know, main thing. Josh was like the accessory. I grew up with a single mom and a sister, and I loved women, and I'd really told them the deepest, darkest things, you know. And so we got married. Really, I moved out of a house with seven girls into a home with Josh, and we stayed in the same city with all of our friends, all of our family. And looking back on it, I didn't have any of the tools to know what to protect about us, that we needed to have a date night. You know, we needed to have these family rituals. We needed to have a Saturday morning that we choose to do together. We needed to have a Sabbath. And I really think those were strengths of mine. Those are still strengths of mine that I bring to our family now. But I didn't use any of those strengths in those early years of marriage. And so we had moved out to this kind of suburb. Josh was a youth pastor, and we were really isolated, not a lot of friends our age. And then a couple moved in a couple years out when we had been there two or three years. And we really attached to this couple. So we were spending a lot of time with them. Our boundaries were definitely blurred. I mean, they were over multiple nights. We ended up moving into their neighborhood across the street from them. And really, I mean, all of the while we would have just said, this was all fine, even though we knew that our boundary lines were, you know, we didn't really have any. And like now, you know, in our marriage, there's such a difference. Like, I would not want to spend a date night with other people every week. He is my absolute favorite person and the person that I want to spend all my time with. So I have to like push myself to add people in to the relationship of us. Then it was totally opposite. You know, there was no like protecting alone time or anything like that. And so we started hanging out with this couple. I really started having an emotional affair for sure about a year before I confessed to affair with to Josh. And the emotional affair I knew was wrong. I knew I was dressing for him, thinking on them, idolizing their life, jealous of their life, different parts about their life, the fact that he was home more, that he didn't work as hard. And this lens that I started to get to Josh really put a wedge in between us, because, you know, whatever you see in your relationship, wherever you're looking, like, you're going to find that specific thing. So when I would see Josh is controlling, he just wants to win, he, you know, he doesn't appreciate or value me. Those were the things I was seeing. And we were fighting a lot, looking back on it. But again, he thought, like, we're just getting through it. This is just what marriage is, you know.
Because we would fight, but then we would also, you know, still go out on a date or still have sex or still, like, mm-hmm. It's not like there were personal needs not being met or a lack of what I thought to be intimacy. It was just with a lot of that stuff happening inside of her, along with, like, when she said she loved women, it would be stuff like something awesome happening in her day or something awful happening in her day, and a girlfriend would be the first person she called to vent to. Mm-hmm. And days or weeks would go by, she would reference it, and I'm like, I got no clue what you're talking about, you know, just because mm-hmm. we hadn't connected in that got way. It.
Yeah, well, so you were a little bit I don't mean to say clueless, but like you kind of were like, everything's fine, and she's like, everything's not fine. So yeah. This, you know, when she confessed, and I want you to kind of go into that story, when she confessed the affair, were you completely surprised? And should you have been?
Yeah. I mean, I, you know, obviously you look back now and I see, that's why I'm, you know, in terms of my word for newly married younger people and the impact of small decisions, looking back now, I'm not surprised. But in that season, that was probably the, I'm, you know, a intuitive people reader, discern a room, and, you know, like I was shocked, like little shock. And so I would say that was probably the mm-hmm. the hardest thing about it for me, just that I had so missed it and it was so severe, you know, made it really all the more painful.
Yeah, it was, I mean, and honestly, what I did confess to him was just, we say with a lot of couples, if they're in a betrayal or they, you know, one couple is able to confess or something's found out, it's usually like the first 10% that they can get out. So over the next year, there was a lot more that would have to come out, you know, to Josh. But that first night that I confessed to him, he definitely had no clue. And I think it made it especially brutal, you know, because he was unaware and he really did think that we had a good marriage, you know, that we, we weren't not speaking, you know, we weren't not sleeping in the room together. Like we really were doing some of the right things. And so when we got to that place of just standing on actual rubble, all trust has been broken. All the masks have been gone because he's been thinking one way about me. I mean, I'm in a women's Bible study, you know, this whole time, and he's been thinking this one way about me, and that mask fell. And in that moment, what we tell couples now looking back is it became the best ground to build a new marriage on, the best ground, because we were both so exposed, and we started to find true intimacy there in that vulnerability. But if you would have asked us in those moments, you know, I especially felt hopeless. And Josh would have the vision to say, Katie, I'm asking you to go to a new place of love with me, a new place of connection, a deeper place of love. And it was really that vision that drove us to be able to get there, looking back, and also many miracles of God.
Sure, right. And probably people and all that. Josh, did you, you know, I know in your book you talk about that you wanted to go to kind of a new level. But when you're in that moment, did you actually think that your marriage was salvageable? I mean, the feeling of betrayal and all those different things that you're feeling. I know that is a horrible feeling. So just how long did it, did you get to a place where you're like, I actually want to try to work on this?
You know, I look back on that and it's like, if anytime you've gone through like a brutal season or you see someone walk through something and ask yourself like, man, could I do that? Could I get through that? And I look back on that season for us, just kind of in awe of God and the fact that like he gives you what you need when you need it. And so for anybody that's never been through something like this, it's almost impossible for you to imagine, but talk about it like, it's what you know about your person that gets you to the altar, but it's everything that you don't know about them, like what 44 is going to feel like, how you handle resentment, all those things that you commit to at the altar. And I would just say it was by God's grace, because obviously you never enter into a marriage thinking about how will I respond the day my spouse has an affair. But for whatever reason in that season, a lot of couples that, that we meet with, like the second principle in the book is to take quitting off the table. And for a lot of couples that don't make it through these kind of seasons, it's because quitting, you know, the back door is always there. You may never talk about it. You may get to a point in your arguments where you start referencing it. Maybe we'd be better without each other, or we need some space, or why don't we just get a divorce? You know, you don't check your language, and even the introduction of it makes it a feasible option. And for whatever reason that I don't attribute to my personal conviction or strength, just the grace of God, it was like from the time we got married, the end game was finishing this thing with Katie and a lifelong marriage and a family that sees us fail and forgive each other and go after God and grow and change. And so I think it was just the grace of God to give me a conviction to what I had committed to and really wanted. I knew God's desire wasn't for us to have a mediocre marriage or some kind of like mundane existence, you know, that if he can take us from death to life in terms of our personal relationship with him, then like he can absolutely take a dead, busted relationship and restore and redeem and really make it something new and awesome. So, and I think in that season, I saw myself and us for a lot of what we were. It's like, man, those first 7 years, it was a lot of passion and ideals and void of reality. Like we were very idealistic and didn't have much to lose. But man, 7 years, three kids, several rental properties, like all of a sudden we were these young adults that had learned a few things, had a lot to lose. And, we're faced with, like, you know, ourselves in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
What did you, so if there's a couple, and I know that we'll be listening, and they're in this space of like, right now it happened, and they're trying to really think about staying, what would you say were some of the things that you did within that first year to start building back to each other.
I would say that's really where the principles of the book come in, and part of what makes it so like special for us is that they are, each of them are very much kind of the God words that got us through that season. And so the S, I'll just go through them quickly, is start with me. And whether you've experienced something like our story, or if you've just drifted apart and wake up one day and realize, like, who are we? You know, the start with me is all about your contribution to the situation, whatever it is. And it's so easy, especially when you've been the one that's been betrayed, to point a finger and blame, because they are responsible for their decision. Mm-hmm. They made a decision and got us here. But in a marriage, man, you both play a part in creating the culture, the vibe of your home and marriage and relationship. And ultimately, when it came to Stuart and Katie's heart, like, man, had I been fully engaged, had we been the priority, there never would have been the opportunity. You know, she would have never considered elsewhere. But so start with me is just don't be so quick and natural to focus on the other person.
And honestly, I can't, it's hard to believe that Josh was able to do that in that moment, because a lot of couples that we talk to that are in a rough season in their marriage, or somebody's hurt them or betrayed them, you know, it does feel like you would be justifying their behavior to take responsibility for it. But the point of what I'm saying is just to look at the culture, look at the environment, look at the garden of your love, you know, from your perspective too, of working on the relationship. And for me, you know, as a person who has had to confess something, whether that's addiction or betrayal or something that you've been hiding, you know, starting with you is really facing you, facing all the shame that wants to actually kill you, but bringing those things to God. And in that moment, you know, I, on my worst night, when I really did not want to go on anymore because I was so full of shame, I heard God's voice in that moment. And I heard him say, I love you. I have plans for you. And, you know, that changed everything for me, because it helped me to know that I could be exposed and still loved. And so that ended up actually helping us to heal, because once I realized that I could be brave enough to expose, I refused to be in hiding anymore about anything. I would tell him everything I was feeling, what I was going through, and still to this day, it's what brings intimacy in our relationship, because God helped me to stop hiding, you know, in so many ways.
Another thing I would say with that, not to over-spiritualize it, but the start with me is also a lot about, like, we're walking with a lot of couples now who the offense happened 5 years ago, 10 years ago, and they're parting ways because bitterness and resentment has so built up inside of them. And a lot of the start with me is about me and God, of like, okay, I love because you first loved me. I forgive because I am forgiven. And so if there's a struggle to forgive or a struggle to love, the first place to look is with me and God, because if I'm putting up any walls with her, there's a good chance that I've put up some walls with him. So start with me. What were you going to say?
I was just going to say the thing, you know, when you talk about shame and the secrets and those kind of things, one of the things we always tell our kids is always tell us, like, always, the secrets will kill you. And the secrets will kill you because the shame will kill you after the secrets kill you. And then you hold it in for so long, and then it starts to eat you alive. So I would tell those who are listening, if there's something that you're holding back and you think, if I tell my spouse, it'll be over. Like, you will never truly connect and have the marriage that you want until it's confessed. And then leaving it in God's hands to be like, you can bring miracles in our life, no matter what it is. So that just kind of that, get it out to your person. So start with you. You talk about take quitting off the table. We talked a little bit about that. And then the A and the Y. Do you guys want to talk about a little bit about what those are?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the A is allow others to be a part of your journey. And for us, you know, here's the interesting thing about counseling is that we are fans of counseling. My degree is in counseling. Josh's degree is in counseling. But we went to several counselors that just did not work for us early on. And I don't know, it could have just been the wrong person or the wrong timing, but oftentimes, you know, marriages that will go to counseling, they've waited so long that, you know, the problem is huge. And then this one person is trying to dissect, tell why, and, you know, figure out how to get between you. For us, we ended up sitting with a couple that we saw had a healthy marriage. They had a marriage that we loved, a family that they loved, and they were starting a small group. So we joined the small group. Well, pretty early on, everybody dropped out of the small group except for us, which was awesome. And so we continued to sit with them week after week in our pain. And they walked with us in that pain and taught us how to bring our vulnerable truths that were happening in the marriage that week and kept building us to a new place. And the marker that they had over our lives was, number one, was hope. They did not have a fear that we weren't going to make it. They did not have a fear that the problem was too big. They truly believed in God, and they believed that because we both wanted it to work, that he was going to bring us to a new place. And so I would just say to any couple out there, when we talk about allowing others to be a part of your journey, if counseling doesn't seem feasible for you, or you've gone to a couple that feel like they may be taking your marriage from a 5 to a 1, or, you know, then I would say look for hope. Look for the hope bringers. Look for a marriage that you admire that can speak life into you and that can say you are the solution to the best marriage of your dreams. Mm-hmm. You two building together are the right answer. You know?
I would even say that was something in that season, but also, like, just this week we sat down with a couple to kind of process a place that felt like we were stuck in, and allowing others to be a part of the story in a lot of ways. Like, you know, it gives you new perspective. It puts a guard on your language. Like, you're not going to be as accusational, and you definitely ain't gonna call no names. You know, it's just like, it's so much healthier when you know they love God and they love you and are there to just be wise counsel to help you process. So allow others to be part of your story. And then the why is yield to vision. And that's just one of those things, man. We've talked about it a lot already, but the 40s, 30s, 20s, it's like, man, each decade has its own focus and hustle. Establishing yourself as a parent or professional, finding your lane, like running hard in it. It's easy to get lost in the season that you're in.
Yeah.
In work and marriage and parenting, whatever, and lose sight of where is this thing going? Who do we want to be? How do we finish this thing? What do Josh and Katie as grandparents look like? What does it look like when we've been married 50 years? What do we do in our free time? What are our passions? You know, just some of those kinds of questions. Because ultimately, when you really start to dream about them 30, 40, 50 years from now, then you start to make decisions about them today.
Yeah, that pickleball retirement that's coming for me in the mountains, please. I think that's so good to talk about the vision. I was talking on the porch with a friend of mine who has three littles, and they're getting bigger. And mine, I have 3 summers left with my boy. And we sat there and we're like, wait a second. When our kids are out of here, it's just me and my husband. Like, what in the world? Like, you know, thinking of, okay, we got to get to know each other again. And are we excited about that? And are we going to look at each other when my kids are out of here and go, I don't even know who you are. I don't even know if I like you anymore. What do we have in common? You know, so not waiting until your kids are at the house and you're sitting on the porch going, what do we talk about? What do we do? You know?
Yes. All of that. That vision. We have our grandparent names and we have them tattooed on our ring finger. And we'll talk about, so ours are Ruby and Bear. And we'll talk about, like, what do Ruby and Bear like to do? Who are they? Where do they want to live? And all that vision really does inform your today. It informs your parenting too, because, like you're saying, you realize, like, you only have them for a short window, so you need to protect your marriage. But the other truth is you only have them in your house consistently for a short window. And so you protect the relationship too. You know, I think a lot about how I want to be with my boys and the voice I want to be and the encourager that I always want them to see me as and for them to call me for wisdom. And, you know, when you have that end in mind, it informs today too, because you have to learn to let go of things, not, you know, give them trauma with your rage and anger.
Right. You know, so. I like the definition of that marriage is a picture of the gospel. And I think that isn't just in the good times, but seeing things be redeemed and forgiven. And obviously, you know, for those who might be listening who are like, wait, I have a spouse who is continuously, you know, cheating on me or doesn't want to get back or is abusive. You know, this is not for that. The staying and all those things, this is for, you know, we're talking about a marriage who might have had some, you know, betrayal and resentment and all those things, but they're wanting to have this marriage that God has for them. So just, I want to make that clear for those who are listening as well, who might be in a different, you know, a different season, a different journey. The last thing I want to ask you, just because we're talking about parenting and you have 7 kids, have you told your kids about this? What have you told them? How have you processed that with them?
Yeah, we have. We have obviously done it in seasons when they were old enough, when they were ready, but we began preaching about this about 10 or 12 years ago in our church pretty publicly. It happened 16 years ago. And so during that time, our kids were in middle school, our oldest. And so we, you know, were able to sit down and talk with them before. We didn't want them to hear it on a Sunday, you know, and not know our full story. So we've kind of done that in phases, like as they've needed it. And really what we use it to is not to tell them the details of it or the travesty of it, but to share with them the gospel. Just like you said, is that, you know, we do not outgrow the cross, and your mom and dad need Jesus. I need Jesus as much I do today as I did then. But the principles that I've learned is that he loves us. He never loves us any more, any less, but there's consequences to hiding. There's consequences to sin. There's real pain to the people that you love. Mm-hmm. And so keeping exposed, keeping our hearts open is the most important thing, to be authentic before God. And even we had an instance recently with people that our kids know and love, and they've also fallen into the trap of betrayal, and it's been pretty public. And our son was really scared. Like, what if I ruin my future? What if I do this travesty myself, you know? And what we told him is, you know what, honestly, you, as long, you will sin, you know, and you, we're not worried that tomorrow you're going to rob a bank, but you may be worried that tomorrow you'll steal a pen. And so when you steal that pen, if you can bring that to the light, if you can say, I don't want to do this, this is, you know, this is where I'm at, it will break that area of darkness. And then, you know, you don't have to be as worried about the big areas of travesty, yeah, you know, that happen in our life. So we try to use it in a gospel oriented way with them, just to show them our weakness. And it protects you as parents too, because you are weak and you are, yeah, vulnerable, and you are going to make so many mistakes. And they need to realize that Jesus has died for you also, that you can be very imperfect and also very loved, yeah, by and him, would, by them.
I would say too, like, we've shared our story with our kids a lot of times in a lot of different ways in age-appropriate contexts. And so, mm-hmm, obviously, when they were, you know, 3, 4, and 7 or whatever it was in one light, and they knew very little. And as they've gotten older, we've shared more. But it's been stuff like the importance of the people that you hang with and the person you're becoming, and how you don't always see it in the moment, but let me tell you how that happened for mom and I. You know, just, mm-hmm, a lot of story and narrative, more so than like sitting down and let us tell you a story one time, mm-hmm, about what we did. And so
great. It's just kind of as they're dealing with some of their own, you know, yeah, things too. I love that. So as we kind of wrap up, I just want to ask, for those who maybe are going through a similar season, and now you are, you know, 16 years out of it. And I never, one of the things I don't love to do, and I appreciate you talking about the hard part, is because I never want people to see like, oh, this really hard thing happened and now we're really great and everything's wonderful, you know, to know that that part, that season was brutal and so hard, and probably the hardest thing that you've ever gone through and will maybe ever go through. But for those who are going, will I always feel like this? Will I always feel hopeless? Can I wake up in the morning and feel joy again? Can you give them a little encouragement now that you are on the other side?
Yeah.
I think, I would say, like, ultimately, This is a God thing, and there's a lot of things in your life that you desire or pursue that you kind of hope they're God's will for your life, or hope it's what he's prepared or gifted you for, you know, starting that business or pursuing that career or whatever it may be. But in terms of, like, the covenant of marriage, you know, he's the one that said, it's not good for man to be alone. I'll make a helper suitable for him. He's the one that said, I hate divorce. You know, he wants to see us struggle through forgiving each other, committing to love one another, ultimately, because this relationship is the only one that I'm called to love as Christ loved the church. And so as I'm willing to die for her in the same way Jesus did for us when we were still sinners, undeserving, broken, he chose to lay his life down that we would be saved. And ultimately, I would say, regardless of a betrayal, regardless of distance or pain that you've experienced, like, this is something God wants for you, a mm-hmm. full, abundant, healthy, mm-hmm. epic adventure of a marriage, not mediocre, mundane, roommate, I thought this would be much better. Like, man, he wants it for you. Mm-hmm. And so, but there is a roadmap to get there. Like, you can't get the blessing that comes from marriage in your own approach. Like, we've got to go about it his way. And if you will stick it out, which I know right now, if you'll stay, like, man, for some people, that can be the hardest word to hear. And as you said, there's exceptions to this with abuse, dangerous situations. Those aren't the kind of things we're talking about. But in the midst of your relational pain and betrayal, like, if you will go after God like you never have before, if you will stay and forgive and work to love, commit to work, man, you can see God do mm-hmm. something you never would have imagined.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and for me, I would tell people, you know, I'm realized about myself, I'm very emotional driven and feelings driven. Mm-hmm. And so I really thought that if I stayed together with Josh, that we would have like a friendship, I would have done the right thing, and we would have been partners, teammates. But I didn't know that actually the emotions, the love, the butterflies, the joy, the peace, the safety, security, but also passion, God authors all of those things. I mean, he made our bodies for pleasure, for actual pleasure, our covenant for pleasure together. Like, he is the author of all of those things. And so what the hope that I would give them is, yes, it was not quick. It was brutal and painful. And but we have this chapter called Just Around the Corner. Like, just around the corner, the entire view shifted for us. And, you know, we started to see glimpses of it. I would tell Josh, I feel differently about you today. Like, I would say those words, like, I'm starting to feel some things again, you know, and he could see in my eyes, like, as we started to cultivate our love and put our time and energy and effort into this relationship, so much was restored. And there's not two right people. You didn't marry somebody with the wrong personality for you. Like, every single garden of love that is cultivated can have the marriage of God's dreams for you specifically, you know? So that would be my encouragement, is that what has been restored to us is more than I could have asked for or imagined, that he is my best friend and favorite person and the person that lights me up and makes me laugh and makes me feel safe and secure. You know, it truly is a new marriage with the same person.
I love it. Well, you guys, thank you so much for sharing your vulnerable story. And I know so many are listening who are right there in the same place. And so I know this will encourage them. I'm so excited for people to get New Marriage, Same Couple, your book. And just thanks so much for being here today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Christy.
Hey everyone, I hope you enjoyed this interview with Josh and Katie Walters. I encourage you to go get their book, New Marriage, Same Couple, that is out this week. And just to encourage you to want to have that marriage. And even if you are in a marriage right now that you're like, I don't know how it's going to get better, or I've been betrayed, or I've gone through something like they have, how will this ever be better? How will I ever find hope again? I encourage you to read their book. Listen again, if you need to this podcast, and reach out to people who can be hope bringers to you, who can go through this with you. Don't do it alone. Thanks so much for being love and doing good in your family and in your community. We'll see you next week.